Thank you, Ken. As Ken just pointed out, some people collect insects, I collect degrees, but I like to use them also. The idea for this symposium was hatched out at a brainstorming session at last year's Youth and Education Committee business meeting. The goal of the symposium was going to be to help people who are passionate about teaching in entomology make connections between their teaching practices and the underlying educational theory, because if you understand theory, you can better manipulate it, and you'll become a better and better teacher. The goal of my specific presentation is to help you construct an understanding of how people learn. The rest of the speakers are going to show you how to apply educational theory in education. Whether they have a background in it or not, they're all doing it instinctively. But I would like to make explicit what is going on in somebody's head when they learn. What I'd like to point out to you now is I have two handouts at the back of the room. One of them is labeled worksheet, and I have a couple of TAs who have agreed to hand them out, so if you didn't pick it up, kind of wave your hand in the air. They're on the chairs at the back. The worksheet will guide you through my presentation. The one labeled handout is a brief review of educational theory, a small selection of it anyway. I couldn't teach a whole course in that in 25 minutes. And that will guide you through my presentation and the rest of the morning. So you can hang on to that one all morning. Mine is pretty much only good for this. My presentation is divided into three sections. The first one will be a brief introductory exercise so that we all understand what we mean when we say learning. When you say, oh, my students are learning this, or my student didn't learn that, what are you thinking when you say learning? What is your definition? So we're going to go over that, and I'm going to try to help you understand that there's a first step in learning, and if that first step isn't completed well, nothing will be learned or will be learned incorrectly. The second section will be an active learning exercise, so get your worksheet. You are going to be writing on it, I hope. If you don't have the worksheet, you could take notes on a blank piece of paper, but that will guide you through an active learning exercise where you will engage yourself with something in order to learn. And the third part will probably be the briefest. That will be just a little review of the handout that is labeled handout. So the first part of section one. If this were a long class and we had a whole semester, I would have you all write down your personal definition of learning, and then we would share it with each other and discuss it so we could arrive at some sort of a group understanding where we're all on the same page. I don't have that much time. Dr. Juergen's watch is running already. So I will tell you that in education, we consider learning to be an adaptive, changed response to a stimulus based on an experience where you are actively engaged with the experience. So stimuli can be anything in the environment. Some of you are looking at me right now and thinking, you know, she's kind of skinny and maybe she's cold because she's got a short sleeve shirt on. That's a stimulus. That is something impacting your brain, but it doesn't really have much to do with my talk, or maybe it does. You don't know yet. The color of the ceiling, what you had for breakfast, what's on the screen right now, whether you can hear me in the back, all of these things are stimuli and you are importing them through things that you already know. As soon as you're born, you start constructing conceptual frameworks in your head to interpret and make sense of the world. That is the underlying premise of educational theory, is that it is a human behavior to try to make sense of things. So learning is when you take these stimuli that are coming into you and you select among them, trying to find the ones that are relevant, and you actively engage with some experience, and then in the future you have a changed response to that stimulus based on that active engagement in the experience. So I'm going to present you with a stimulus. I'd like you to pay close attention to the stimulus. And then when I describe a scenario to help you learn things so you can better understand that stimulus, I want you to make notes at the bottom of page one on which information is coming from me and which information is coming from inside your head from previous learning experiences. So here's the first presentation of the stimulus. I hear a train whistle. The train is moving from southeast to northwest. What should I do? Well, you can't possibly answer that because you don't have any information. I'm going to teach you something, and then you'll be able to answer it. This is a map of Coralville in Iowa. And what I'd like to point out to you, and let's see if I can get this pointer thing working here. Maybe I'll have to to use this. Well, I don't even see the pointer, so we'll move on. What I'd like to show you is that right where it says University of Iowa on the slide, there is a railroad track that runs from southeast to northwest. And then there's something labeled 6. That's Highway 6. And in between the gray area is all University of Iowa property. Some of it's undeveloped. Some of it is minor sports teams property. Football and basketball get big places right next to the hospital, go figure. Makes it hard to get to the emergency room on game days. But soccer, softball, some of the other minor sports, they get property over there in that gray area between the railroad track and Highway 6. And the end of the soccer field is a swamp. And there's a place where my family and I used to go pick cattails in the spring. And there are a lot of different things that I do in that area. There's all kinds of activities that I like to do. And I often take my kids with me. When we lived in Iowa City, I was working on a PhD, raising 5 children, and had 25 hours a week of childcare. So there were things that if I wanted to do, I took the kids with me. One of the things we did in that area was collect insects. I taught my daughter to use a sweep net over in the meadow next to the swamp by the soccer field. And on the day when the train whistle happened, I was over there, I had some things I wanted to do in that gray area, and my kids were with me, and I'd finished what I was doing, and the kids were not finished. There was a patch of gravel next to the track, and Coralville is called Coralville because Iowa used to be at the bottom of an ocean a very long time ago, even before Dr. Juergen and I were born. Some places, that ocean floor is now very close to the surface, and fresh gravel in Iowa City and Coralville area often has fossils in it, fossil coral, and my kids like to pick it up. That day, somebody had dumped a load of fresh gravel recently, which is good, because this hasn't been picked over yet. So my kids were down on the ground next to the track, picking through the gravel, looking for fossils. And, I wanted to be a little mellow, so I put one foot up on the metal rail of the track, and I stood there and watched my kids and thought about life. And then I heard a train whistle. The train is moving from southeast to northwest, and we are essentially northwest of where the train is when I hear it whistle. What should I do? Now, what information came from your own head? What information came from me? How many of you think I should get off that track and get my kids out of there right now? Raise your hands. Now think about why. What was the underlying conceptual framework? It didn't come from me, did it? Came from your own previous experience with trains, right? And so you think the adaptive behavioral response to this stimulus, now that you know what the scenario is get off the track. How many of you think if I stay right where I am, it's safe? I just taught you something, you didn't learn it, because I didn't check what conceptual framework you were using. There's that swampy end of the soccer field where I sometimes collect bugs. And it looks like the back part of a softball field. There's the railroad track. This is the one that was in that map picture. There's my daughter picking gravel on the track. There she is with her foot on the metal rail. Now watch what I did. And be aware that a single word can be enough to invoke the wrong conceptual framework in your students. And all the information they import, the stimuli they select from what you tell them, will be incorrect and inappropriate. There is the view from the railroad track towards the University of Iowa property. There is gravel next to a track with fossils in it. There's my daughter with her foot on the rail of the track. There is my track. That's one of the things I was doing that day. That's the view from my track towards the railroad. There's my daughter with her foot on the railroad track. How many of you had that in your head? Yeah. How many of you had this in your head? And Dr. Juergen had explicit instructions not to tell any of you that I'm a runner. Yes, I'm skinny, and that is relevant. The point here, if you're learning something, everything you've learned before, everything you know and you believe, will filter everything that is coming into your head, and you will learn, you will organize the incoming information based on what is in your head as much as in what you are hearing from the speaker. And a single word, if I say ortho, I could be talking about the person who straightens my kids' teeth, the doctor who looked at my daughter's knee when she hurt herself in gymnastics, or Dan Johnson, who studies grasshoppers up in Canada. All right, section two. We're going to do a little active learning exercise. So flip over to page two of your worksheet. I'm going to show you some nonsense triplets. There are going to be 24 of them. I'd like you to learn as many of them as possible. Each nonsense triplet consists of three letters in order. I'd like you to learn as many as you can, but what you do not need to do is learn the triplets in their sequences of the triplets. So if I give you ABC, you need to remember ABC, not CBA. But if the next one is XYZ, you don't need to have ABC followed by XYZ, okay? Could be XYZ and then some other triplet and ABC you might not even remember. I'm going to give you 90 seconds, all right? Any questions? You ready? Go. Don't write them down, just learn them. All right, I'd like you to self-test. There's a place on your worksheet where you can write down as many of them as you can remember. And while you're doing it, think about what you did to help you remember them. When you were trying to learn those nonsense triplets, you were doing something in your head to help you learn them. So write down as many as you can remember, and then write down what it was you did to help you learn them. And when you're done, kind of look up, and when I see enough people done, I'll let you self-test. Honor system. All right, you ready to self-test? Go ahead, see how many you got correct. Write down the number that you got correct. How many of you got all 24? Raise your hands. 23? 22? I didn't teach you very well. You didn't learn much. Okay, I'm going to run down the numbers. When I yell out a number that you got that number correct, raise your hand and keep it up. 21, 20, 19, 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11. Somebody got 11. Keep the hand up, please. 10. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. Okay. Typical number that you can remember for something like this is 7. That is actually why phone numbers have 7 digits, 7 numbers in them. that is well known, is that you can hold just about 7 pieces of information in short-term memory. Now, we'll talk later about the strategies used, but I want you to be thinking about that strategy used, because what you did was you invoked a conceptual framework that you already had to try to help you learn that. And I'd also like you to keep that note of which ones you got correct. Now, we're going to go on to some word jumble. Oh, I already did it. How did that happen? Sorry, guys. We're going to go on to the word jumble. You've been memorizing those while I was... Oh, no, that was self-testing. Okay. Yes. All right. Sorry. I can't even see my own screen. We're going to go on to some word triplets. In this case, the triplets of 3 letters will make an actual word. Same deal. I'd like you to remember as many as you can of them. See how many you can learn. And again, they don't need to be in the same order that they are listed. Just see how many you can remember. All right? And I'm going to give you 60 seconds to do this. So see how many of the 3-letter words you can remember. Everybody ready? Any questions? Let's go. Okay, kind of look at the horseshoe crab, write down as many of those words as you can remember, and write down the strategy that you use to learn them. When you're done, kind of look up, make eye contact, and move on. Are you ready to self-test? Okay. There were 36 this time instead of 24, and I gave you less time. Tell me how many of these word triplets you got right. So score yourself, write down a number. Okay, how many of you got all 36 correct? All right, same deal as before. I'll count down the numbers. When we get to a number that is your score, raise your hand. 35, 34, 33, 32, 31, 30. Can I jump down by 5? Does anybody get 25 of them right? 24, 23, 22, 21, 20, 19, 18, 17, 16. Okay, we got higher scores this time. Curve breakers. 15, raise your hands. 14, 13, 12, 11. Now wait a minute, look around the room for a moment. Last time that was the high score. How come you learned so much more this time? Right? Typical number of pieces of information that you can hold in short-term memory is 7. So why are the scores so much higher this time? All right, let's see how much more you can learn. I'm going to give you another piece of information. This is the equivalent of 37 word triplets, except you'll see what it is. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to learn this one, okay? Just at this time, you have to have all the information exactly in order, exactly as I put it on the screen. You ready? All right, self-test, write down as much as you can remember exactly as is. And then think about what you did to help you remember it. All right, let's self-test. Honor system. How many of you got the whole thing right, down to the author? Okay, raise your hands high. How many people got most of it right, maybe missed a word here or there? Why? Think hard about what just happened in here. Either I'm a really great teacher, you're really great learners, or I was manipulating you. All right, I was manipulating you. What did you do to try to remember the nonsense triplets? And I will take a little audience participation, so I hope my timer will be a little bit lenient with me here. Somebody raise your hand. Tell me what you did to help you remember. Yes?
Well, some of them were acronyms that we already knew, obviously.
Exactly. Some of them were acronyms that you already knew. Those of you who kept your little things that you wrote down, how many of you had ESA on your list? Why? Well, there are a lot of words you already know. But this one, there's a connection. Learning is all about making connections. How many of you got NCB? How many of you are in the NCB who got that? Yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? How about IPM, GMO, MNH, systematists maybe, right? Museum of Natural History, PCR, the gene jocks, EAB, biological control people. How many got DMR? Yeah. Why?
It was very similar to something already.
Okay. Similar to something already. For me, that would jump out because DMR is distance medley relay. If this had been a room full of track people, you would have missed ESA and a bunch of the other ones, but you would have gotten that. So one of the ways that people try to learn things is by connecting them. You connected those letters into acronyms. Am I right about that? And some of them were already done for you. There are other ways that people do this. There are other strategies, but they all involve making connections to what they already know. How about the word triplets? Somebody raise your hand. Tell me what you did. Yeah.
I made nonsense sentences.
Exactly. You made sentences. How many people made sentences out of the words? It's a very, very common thing to do. You're connecting them. You're connecting them to things you already know. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Right. Some of them were familiar, and some of them, if you looked carefully, if you put them together, there was one and ton, but that makes wonton. So you could have connected some of them into a longer word. But again, it's about making connections. How about remembering the quotation? How did you do that, Carol? Exactly. You're going for meaning, which again is making a connection to things that you already know. How many of you at some point asked yourself, do I agree with that? Anybody? That, yeah, you're nodding your heads instead of raising your hands. That's a very common thing to do. That is one of the more advanced steps in the learning process. So the big take-home points here, the conceptual frameworks that you already have determine what you learn. you will automatically try to construct a new conceptual framework for information that won't connect to anything. You'll try and connect it with anything you can, even if it's inappropriate, and you will construct new conceptual frameworks. If you have an inappropriate conceptual framework, you will not learn what is being taught. Your students may be trying very hard, and they are having trouble learning because they are not thinking the same thing you are. They're on the wrong track. Not as literally as we were in here a little while ago, but still. And sometimes a conceptual framework has an underlying conceptual framework. There is something beneath it that it has to connect to, and you have to evoke that in your students before you can move on to teaching them the information. So at this point, I'd like you to pick up the general handout, and we will do a quick review of the underlying theory of education. It's called constructivist theory because you construct information in your head. You make conceptual frameworks. And there is a step-by-step model for this that people have worked out by studying how people learn. I'm going to run through it quickly, and then I will leave it to the rest of my speakers to show you how to apply that in entomology specifically. The handout has some general ideas for application that would work in almost any subject, certainly in any science. The first step, just like that introductory exercise we did, is awareness, attention. What stimuli do you import from the environment? What do you notice? How many of you looked at me and thought, gee, she's thin. I wonder if that's relevant in any way. I don't know. I've had people do that, so I always try and distract them. You know, like, don't tell them I'm a runner. Don't mention anything about running. But your students are going to be distracted by all kinds of things in the room, the color of the paper if you give them a handout. All kinds of things will distract them. You need to draw their attention specifically to the things you want them to pay attention to. Carefully worded headings, bold type, underline. Use focused questions when you start a discussion. Explain the key objective. What is the main purpose of today's lesson? That will help them through that first step, without which the rest is very unlikely to happen. The second step is actually selecting among those stimuli and importing them, remembering those nonsense triplets. If I tested you again now, you wouldn't remember as many of them, except the ones that you already had connections to. So in order to help them recall the information you want them to have the students repeat in their own words exactly what it was that you told them, not in your words, because they can memorize that, in their own words to show you that they comprehend. Step three is generating links. This is where they start to connect the information that you have given them to what they already know. And again, some suggestions over on the third column. Give them reminders of things you taught them in previous lessons, things that are in the textbook. Help them make explicit connections between what you just tried to teach them and what you have already taught them and what they've already learned. And then connect to anything else you can. The more connections, the stronger that learning will be. Constructing meaning. This is where the learner has to engage. I loved it when I looked all at you and your heads were all bent down. You were staring at the screen learning, and then you were bent down doing that active engagement. If students do not actively engage with learning, they're less likely to learn, maybe even unlikely to learn. So anything you can do to promote that active engagement will help them learn. Step five. This is what some of you were doing with that quotation. It's the evaluation of the construction. You read that quote and you ask yourself, do I believe that? Is it possible to be foolish when you're consistent? Are there times when consistency is not a good thing? Is it always good, or is it never good? You were evaluating that and deciding for yourself and then fitting it into your existing knowledge, your existing view of the world. That's something you automatically do. You can help students with this process by the teaching strategies that you use. And then the final step is when you subsume it into long-term memory. And this is different from short-term memory. This is where it helps to be aware of your own awareness as you are learning. It's called metacognition. Pay attention to what's going on in your head while you're learning something and make a point of actively connecting, actively having links. Well, with that, I'm going to leave it to the rest of my speakers to show you how this can be done in entomology explicitly. And I know, I've seen some of their presentations and I've talked to them, and I know that they're going to do an excellent job. These are all master teachers in their field. There's a little thing at the bottom of page two of your general handout. That is a brief review of a taxonomy of learning objectives. There are different levels of learning. The simplest one being that all you do is have the information, you can memorize it and repeat it, and that's all. The highest one is evaluation. That is where you decide for yourself whether or not you believe what you were just taught. And your goal is to get your students to the point where they can find their own information and evaluate it. And thanks to these are people who helped me with my education, and my husband who helped me put together my PowerPoint on his PC so I wouldn't have Mac issues with the images. Thank you.